Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Okay, this is the Naturalist Program. I'm Carol Butler.
And Bernie Wides.
And we are broadcasting from Roberta's, and we are presenting our second program about the Galapagos Island. This time we will allow ourselves to talk about the animals.
Right.
We were trying to hold back in the last show.
We try to restrain, but you know, there's so much.
Some of the animals got in.
I would like to do a commercial for the Galapagos.
Go ahead.
If you can afford to go there, and you're at all interested in natural history or animals or a really terrific place to visit, you should go. Right, Carol? Would you recommend that?
Absolutely. The people that I traveled with, I actually just wanted to go on intercession.
Yeah.
Because I'm a professor at NYU and we have a month off, and mm-hmm. I wanted to go then. And so the travel agent found a spot for me. I wanted a small boat. And so she got me a cabin on this boat. So I knew nothing about, I didn't really care who I went with. But it turned out this was a group of retired English birders, very serious birders, most of them. And one wonderful woman who was Viennese and lived in England for many years, and a young guy who was also lived in England. But they were very serious and knowledgeable about birds. And these were very well-traveled people. That's mm-hmm. the point. And I asked them after a while, is there any place you've been like this where you have this kind of experience?
Yeah.
And the only place that they could come up with that was anywhere comparable was Antarctica.
Right. Because you can walk right up to the penguins in Antarctica and all that stuff, yeah.
But
put it on your list, Antarctica.
Yeah, it's too cold. I'm not as... I'm not such an adventurer. But the idea is, again, we talked in the other show about the islands, but each island has a trail that you have to stay on. And I have a photograph of the path with an arrow pointing. You just broken lava, usually. And you stay on the path. But where it takes you is to where all different types of animals live and where birds nest, and all kinds of incredible things that you would never see anywhere. And you walk along, and there are birds. You have to stay 2 meters away from the birds. But the birds are just sitting in a tree or sitting on the ground with an egg. Or sitting on the trail. There was a mockingbird came and sat on somebody's hat.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they have just... people are not allowed to feed them, and there's no danger from people. So they're completely uninterested in you.
Mm.
If they happen to be sleeping or looking the other way, they don't even turn around. They really are not interested in the slightest. And so it's a wonderful atmosphere.
Unique. It's like a zoo without the cages.
Right. And you walking around... on one island where the blue-footed boobies and the Nazca boobies are all breeding, and they're mm-hmm. all sitting there with chicks and eggs, little chicks that are either under the mother or next to the mother, and the mothers are pushing the egg around, and you would think that a bird would be alarmed at
you're coming near the nest.
15 people standing around, but they just aren't.
They're so used to people.
Right.
That's good. Okay.
So that's kind of the way it is. Yeah. If you can go, and it's so they're making such an effort to preserve it.
That's
you
good.
Have to wash your shoes off when you get back to the boat. They don't want you to even carry a grain of sand mm-hmm. from one island to the other.
Or seeds,
right?
Right.
Or anything.
Yeah.
So it's really very pristine. And hopefully, if you save your money and go at some point in the future, it'll still be quite wonderful.
Yes, and it was a reasonably priced trip, right?
It wasn't for what it was. It was certainly worth it for the kind of experience it was.
Yeah. Just one thing. The biggest threat to the islands now are population. People moving from the mainland for looking for jobs.
A couple of the islands have little towns
and they try to keep the population down, but there are a lot of poor people that come out. They're fishermen and, you know, other stuff.
I think that a lot
of the
islands...
it's under control now.
I think it's more under control.
That's good, because when we were there, that was a big threat.
Yeah. There aren't many. They're just these little towns. A couple of islands have towns on them. Mm. But even the agriculture is diminishing. At one point, they were growing bananas, right, and there was more farming, and that's been discouraged.
That's good.
Because they really want to keep the islands in this condition.
Sure, it's sort of a jewel. And
right.
It certainly brings them a lot of money.
Oh, yeah. Well, you have to pay. When you get to Santa Cruz, when you check in through immigration, everybody has to pay, well, I guess not everybody, but any foreigners, you have to pay $100, mm-hmm, which goes to the Darwin
Research Station.
So that's quite a revenue stream, because there are lots of people coming, and that's just the direct revenue that they collect, much less, you know, the other, I'm sure there are fees that the boats pay for going on these trips. Anyway, let's not talk about money. Let's talk about the animals.
Okay.
So I have lots of photographs on the website for the show. What I don't have photographs of, maybe we should talk about first, penguins.
Mm-hmm.
We went to Genovesa, and we went in a little boat near an island that had the penguins. We weren't allowed to go on it. And we saw, it was very exciting, because penguins are so rare. And they are these very small 30-centimeter penguins, and we saw a number of them. And just to watch them move is just amazing. It was very exciting, I thought. Did you see penguins when you were there?
Yeah. Now, the question, Carol, is why are the penguins there so close to the equator?
Well, I'm sure you know the answer.
Okay. And if you heard our first show, I mentioned this Humboldt Current, named after the famous German geologist and explorer von Humboldt, which comes up from Antarctica, bringing cold water from Antarctica.
Right.
Now, there are no penguins in the Northern Hemisphere.
Right.
The reason being that the equator, which travels all around, which is all around the Earth, is very hot all around the Earth, and it's a thermal barrier to the penguins. Mm-hmm. The water is too warm for them. They can't stand the warm water. Okay, so normally there's no penguins further north.
Right, there are no penguins.
Than the southern tip of South America, Argentina, the southern tip of Africa, and as you go around the Earth. They're there because of this cold current that brings cooler water up there. But they're just about surviving up there. You don't see huge populations there.
No.
Okay, so it's very unusual to see penguins that close to the equator.
Right. Well, you don't see them anywhere, right?
Only on that island,
right, and maybe on some like some of the other animals. You see them there, and maybe in Peru, in adjacent islands where they've swum or flown nearby.
Yep.
But yeah,
okay.
So the other animal I took photographs. We went to the top of one of the islands, and we saw albatrosses breeding. Mm. Now there's one place in the world that albatrosses breed, and we were there. Mm-hmm. It's that spot. But unfortunately, the light wasn't good, and they were far from the path, and so my photographs were terrible. And there was also one, maybe two, that were almost ready to fledge. So they're quite big, and they were exercising their wings, which was fabulous. But again, I couldn't get a good photograph.
Yeah, they're huge birds. They must have like almost 10, 11-foot wingspans when they open up their wings.
Right.
And we saw them. I don't remember now because I'm getting my trips confused, whether we saw them in the Galapagos or in the Falklands when we went to Antarctica. And they always breed on a cliff because they're like a big jet that's that's heavy. They have to run along the ground
first
to the edge of the cliff and jump off and start flapping their wings.
But that's interesting that you say that, because the one that I'm imagining that was flapping its wings was it was on a flat area, and there was no way it could get airborne.
Yeah.
It was trying very hard, but it clearly needed some elevation.
Right.
And then when we were sailing in the ocean from one island to the other, we saw albatrosses in the water, which was very exciting.
Sitting on the water.
Sitting on the water, like ducks, like seagulls.
Well, albatrosses never come to land except to breed.
Right.
They're always out on the ocean flying. They're fantastic flyers, and they can sit on the water like ducks.
Right.
At least they can take a rest. But they only come on land to breed and in the Galapagos.
And there's that word again, that we had this on an early show, the word for animals that live in the water. And we couldn't remember it,
Yeah.
And I can't remember it now.
You mean that live on the water?
There's a special word for animals that live on the water.
Oh,
not
okay.
Marine animals. There's another word. Anyway.
Okay.
Probably refers to birds that live in the water. Ugh, okay. I'm not going to think about
pelagic? This. Pelagic?
Maybe, yes.
Maybe it's pelagic.
I think that's it. Very good.
Okay.
The other thing that we saw that I don't have photographs are dolphins.
Mm.
We were looking for them. When we went through a certain area, they told us to look for them. And sure enough, we saw them, and they it was just magnificent. Mm. They come over to the boat, and they swim with the bow wave of the boat, and they leap out of the water. It's very dramatic and exciting. I also didn't have my camera at that moment.
Sure. I mean, dolphins are always beautiful to see.
Right.
But dolphins you can see in many places.
I've seen them
in Florida.
Right. I didn't run and get the camera because I've seen them.
Sure.
On Long Island Sound, I've seen them when I was a kid.
But the Galapagos has all these endemic, which means animals that are only there and
only
no other place.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah.
What are wonderful are the boobies. Which are very beautiful. My grandchildren love the name of boobies. They were very cute because I brought photographs to show them when I visited them recently. One is 4.5. One is just 4. One is 5.5. And so I said, this is a red-footed booby, and you'll see it on the website. And it's just a funny name.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had to find a blue-footed booby because I have a photograph of that, too. So we looked for that photograph. And there's also a Nazca booby.
Yes. And how did they get their name, boobies?
I don't know.
From the British sailors who were there.
Mm-hmm.
They said they act like boobies, which means, you know.
Like dopey-like?
Dopey.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's it.
Well, what my
You know, and they look
the way
they look dopey,
their
too,
feet,
with their
you
blue
can
feet
see
and
their
red
feet.
Feet.
Are like, their feet are like duck feet.
Right. Yeah.
Although I don't, the blue boobies would be, we saw them on the ground a lot.
Too?
Yeah,
they
but the red-footed
trees.
Boobies yeah. were nesting in the trees.
Yeah.
But my grandchildren were very interested in this and a lot of hilarity and excitement about the boobies. And like 3 hours later, the little one picks up her shirt and says, this is a booby, and points to her breast. But somehow, it struck me so funny because it took so long.
To make the connection.
Whether they made it. I think they just laughed spontaneously, but yeah. somewhere they made the connection and then decided to tell me.
So sure, just the word itself sounds funny.
It's a silly word,
it's a
right?
silly word.
But they're absolutely beautiful birds.
Yeah.
And the blue-footed booby, you can even see there's a little pink on the bill. They're just gorgeous. And they're quite big.
Mm.
And
about the size of a goose, probably.
Yes, yes.
A small goose.
Right. So they were very exciting.
And they do this courtship thing. Did you see that?
Talk about it, yeah.
Yeah, where they stand in the, and face each other, and they sort of move their heads around mm-hmm. and touch each other and do a whole mating ritual.
Right.
So you have two boobies bobbing around.
Right.
That would make a good song, The Bobbing Boobies.
The Bobbing Boobies.
Yeah.
Then we also saw, talking about courting, we saw swallowtail gulls, which I posted a photograph of, which are absolutely beautiful birds with a black head, and they have a red circle around each eye, which is so dramatic. The photograph that I have doesn't really show it clearly enough, but they're courting and they're grooming each other. Mm. It's very beautiful. And we saw flamingos. I only saw one flamingo. But I think after I left, they went to another island where they saw more.
Mm-hmm.
But I posted the flamingo. It was quite far away. But it's very beautiful to see the flamingo in the distance. And we saw a Galapagos hawk, which was also in the distance. But I thought of Peter Capagnolo, who I wrote the raptor book with, and I had my eye out for a hawk to get for Peter, and so I was determined, and I got a good photograph of it, which I sent to him right away, because that's a unique variation on the hawk.
Is it just endemic to the Galapagos?
That particular, that's again, it's an adaptation.
Yeah.
It's very brown, and it's...
Yeah, I remember seeing it.
They're very beautiful.
Yeah.
And we saw... I lost track of time. I don't know if we are half. Did we? I think it's. All right, let's talk a little bit more. Maybe we'll talk about the. We'll finish with the birds and talk about the iguanas and other animals in the second half. we saw a night heron, a yellow-crested night heron, which is a gorgeous bird.
Beautiful bird.
I posted that. And I have a juvenile, which was also very beautiful, very well camouflaged. You see it against the lava rocks. And the night heron, here's Jack, the night heron only is normally, it's a night heron, it's a nocturnal bird. But because there are no predators, you just see them in the day standing around.
They hang out.
They were standing actually very cleverly next to an inland pond full of fish. So if they got hungry, they just dipped in and got a fish. And we saw blue herons. Those are very big.
The big blue herons.
I posted the blue heron also. It's hard to see it. It's at the foot of a very dramatic looking cliff. But they are also magnificent birds. Oh, and the frigate birds. Why don't you talk about that?
The frigate birds are amazing.
Yeah.
If you've never seen a frigate bird, think of one of these sailplanes, a gliders, with long, long, long pointy wings. And that's how they got the design from the frigate bird. It's a fantastic flyer, and it has two names. It's called a frigate bird or the man-of-war bird.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a frigate was a fighting ship. It was like a destroyer in the old days of sailing. And a man-of-war was also a fighting ship.
Right. Okay? Now, I actually know why they have that name.
They have that name because they steal.
Well, they also sit on the boat.
Oh, okay.
When we were, I was really surprised. They sit on the mast of the boat on the cross piece.
Yeah.
And no matter how we go, we're quite far from land, and they just sit up on there.
Oh, yeah. That's fantastic.
They
flyers.
Gather on the boat. So we had sometimes 10, 12 of them sitting up there. I have a photograph of a male flying, because they're very beautiful flyers, as Bernie said. And you can see the red patch on its neck. And when they're mating, they inflate that patch, so it's like a big red balloon.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really see, I saw one that was kind of half inflated, but it wasn't very pretty. So I, in my trip, didn't get to see anybody really.
Maybe it wasn't the mating season for them.
There was a lot of mating going on. Everybody was mating. And I also have a photograph of a juvenile frigate bird, which are also quite big, but you can see the plumage is quite different.
It's different,
yeah.
But they are really beautiful and fantastic flyers, but you know, they're pirates. They steal
from other birds,
like eagles do that too sometimes, and even I don't know if ospreys do it, but a lot of birds of prey will do that. It's easier than catching your own fish.
Right.
Somebody's got a fish in their mouth, the frigate bird will dive down and smack into the bird and grab the fish from them.
All right, why don't we maybe take a break? And then we'll come back and talk about other animals other than birds.
Okay, callers, we're going to take a break now. Great, put on that beautiful music.
This program has been sponsored by the Hearst Ranch. At Hearst Ranch, ranch manager Cliff Garrison describes their philosophy. Raising cattle on grass is both an ancient practice and one that is standard in much of the modern world. Sometimes the old ways are the right ways. We believe that our methodology is the right one for us. For more information on their premium grass-fed beef, visit HearstRanch.com.
You hear that? It said, where do you come from? We come from Ecuador. Okay. We are back This is Carol Butler.
And Bernie Wise.
And we are still talking about the Galapagos Islands. And we talked a lot about the birds, and I encourage you to look on the website. We have photographs of a lot of very beautiful, dramatic-looking birds that we saw up very close when we were there. We should just mention the warblers. We didn't see many. On one island, there were yellow warblers sitting in a big lava rock, and it had a little depression, and there was water in it. And so they were bathing, and one has a little red on its head, which I think is the male. And it was just beautiful, and they were like right out on your coffee table. You know, that's how it was. We could get really close to them. They kept on bathing. And I told everybody, I remembered going to Central Park with you, and Bernie was trying to show me that there's a time in New York when the warblers pass through Central Park, and there were all different types of warblers, and lots of birders are out in the park with their binoculars trying to spot the warblers. And we walked all over. We saw a cardinal. I remember that. That was beautiful. And we saw a lot of birds, but I don't remember seeing any warblers. They're very small.
They're very hard to spot because, you know, when they arrive just as the trees are leafing out, and the leaves of the trees in the spring are yellow-green.
Yeah.
So the warblers, you know, and they're hard to see, but you have to go with a good birder.
Right. Well, I went with you, which you're a very good birder.
Okay.
No, you're good. And we ran into people in the park, and it was just interesting to me because everybody was saying, what did you see,
right,
and comparing notes on which warblers they had seen. And there are quite a few different species. And here we are, and the warbler is like right in my lap practically when we're in the island. I thought of them. You know.
Yeah, they look like canaries, warblers.
Yes.
Little yellow birds.
Right.
Little yellow jobbies.
Right. So the other main, I guess, group of animals that you see in the islands, well, there are sea lions, which I was not too interested in them. They make a lot of noise, which is wonderful. Yeah. They make very funny noises.
They bark, they go.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you've sort of seen them in zoos and things.
Right.
But they're everywhere, and they're very amusing most of the time. And but they're not, I found them not very photogenic. I think if you were going to really try to get a good photograph of them, you'd have to spend a lot of time, because I took a lot of photographs of them, and they look ugly.
Were there some on the beach when you went down to the beach?
Everywhere,
edge? Yeah.
Yeah,
all over the place.
Yeah, everywhere.
Right.
On the beach, you go up on the lava rocks path, and quite a distance in from the beach, you might find a sea lion under a bush. There are a lot of young ones, and they get around quite a distance.
So they were all sea lions?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. They weren't the seals.
At one point on one island, we saw some seals.
Mm-hmm.
From the small boat, but they were just in one spot, but otherwise we saw sea lions.
Sometimes it's hard to see the difference if they're far away.
Right. The shape of the head is a little different.
The shape of the head, and they have external ears.
Right.
And seals, I think, have internal ears, the true seals.
And the flippers are different.
They are. They point differently.
Right.
Because the sea lions can get up on their flippers and really move fast.
Right.
Seals can't do that. They have to sort of slither along.
Right.
Okay, so what's next, Carol?
Well, the other main type of animal that you see are the iguanas.
Yeah, they're the most fascinating there.
Right. So what was your experience with the iguanas?
Well,
I don't know. I'm talking a lot here, but Bernie was there as well.
First of all, when you approach the area where the iguanas are, you don't see them because they're on these rocks that are black. You know, it's all basaltic rocks from the lava from the volcanoes. It's pretty gray black. Mm. And the iguanas are the same color.
Well, we saw some that were a lot of red and yellow, yeah.
So and they're out there basking in the sun because they're cold-blooded. So they always want the sunshine and the heat. And if they stay still, you have to really look, and all of a sudden you'll see them.
Mm-hmm.
But the amazing thing is that the iguanas have learned to feed underwater because they don't have any competition for the food.
Mm-hmm.
So what they do is they'll dive underwater, and they'll rip the green algae, like seaweed, from the rocks and eat it, bring it up and eat it. So... that was one of the exciting things when we went snorkeling.
Mm-hmm.
We were able to see the marine iguanas diving in the water, and grabbing a snatch of seaweed.
Oh, that would be nice.
And
yeah.
going back up.
Oh, wow.
So you know, they're mammals. They can't breathe underwater right. like seals and right. other most other mammals, all other mammals. So that was exciting. But just seeing those iguanas, they look so prehistoric.
They do.
You know, you could think you're back in Jurassic times.
That's true.
With these critters. They look like, and some of them have those spikes on the back, you know.
Right. Well, I brought...
Not really spikes, but sort
well,
of...
Well, they're spines.
Spines.
I posted two photographs.
Yeah.
There's one photograph, the ones with the spines on the back are the marine iguanas. That's how you can tell the difference.
Okay.
And the land iguanas don't have any spines on the back.
Okay.
So we have a picture of a marine iguana on a rock, and we have a picture of a land iguana from a different angle that had a lot of yellow in it.
Mm-hmm.
But they're big. They have big, long tails. They're, well, I don't know, 3 feet long, sometimes more.
Mm.
And the older ones are pretty... I'm showing it physically, but I don't know how to say it. They're not skinny animals. They're not like lizards. They're quite massive.
They are massive.
And they're very dramatic looking, as Bernie said. And sometimes you just see one. And on one island, there were lots of them. It was a breeding area. And they move very slowly, and they're basking, as he said. But also, you can come, you walk past, they turn their head, they sort of look at you, but they're not bothered by the fact that there are all these people walking around. And we came on one island, Darwin, our guide, was very happy. We saw a hybrid iguana.
Oh.
Because he had said that the marine iguanas and the land iguanas can mate.
Mm-hmm.
And the hybrid, I have a photograph of it, but I posted so many photographs, I didn't post that one. The hybrid iguana has spines partway along its back, and the rest of it not. And on the front part, it has some striping, and the rest of it not. So you can really see, if you know that, if you know what you're looking at, you can see that it's a hybrid.
Yeah. Which one has the spines again?
The marine iguana has the spines, and the land iguana does not.
Yeah, they're the same species, I think,
yes.
really.
Yeah, because they can mate.
Adaptation for different environments. I mean,
that's right.
They discovered that there's a lot of food underwater, and I guess they learned how to dive down. But even without a snorkel, they went down and get it. Yeah.
Then we saw there are also the... tortoises, the land tortoises,
oh, yes.
which are huge.
Yeah.
I have a photograph, a wonderful photograph. I really like that photograph a lot. I have that as my screensaver on my laptop. On the first day, we were climbing up on Santa Cruz, and they took us to an area where the tortoises live.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually migrate across the island to breed once a year, and they cover several kilometers a day as they go across the island. But we saw one enormous tortoise, and I included a photograph of people standing around it so you can see where it was, where we found it, mm-hmm. and how close you could get to it, because a number of people walked down, and we were standing sort of all around it taking photographs, and it was perfectly fine. It was watching us, but it was perfectly still. And at one point, one of the men... not from our group. One of the men went past too close. He was cutting across, and he went too close to the tortoise. This is the thing. This is, what, a few hundred pounds. I mean, it's enormous.
Yeah.
They said it was like 100 years old, this tortoise. You see it. You can really see how big it is in the photograph that I posted. But when he went too close to it, it went, and it pulled. It was really something, and it pulled its head, and it reacted. Which was interesting because you realize how they don't react normally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we also saw quite a few marine tortoises mating.
Sea turtles. Green sea turtles, were they?
I guess so. I don't know if they were green.
Mm.
But you see them swimming around in the water, which is kind of fun when they pop up. But then you see them mating with the male on top of the female. Sometimes we saw three together.
On the beach they mate.
In the water.
In the water.
In the water.
Oh, terrific.
You think, what is that in the water? Long Island Sound, we think it was driftwood or something.
Yeah.
You know, you see this funny-looking thing in the water moving around, and it's two turtles connected, mating, and you know, moving around in the current and being tossed and turned. So that was, we saw that quite a few times. That was really interesting.
Yeah.
And what else?
Sally Lightfoot.
Yes, there's I posted a beautiful photograph that I just accidentally got. Just one of these, they call it a grab shot. You know, you just, yeah. I got on the beach and there are a lot of these Sally Lightfoot crabs, but this one came out with a blue portion of the face, very dramatic, large and blue. I'm sure it was a very mature adult. Maybe it was a breeding female or something. And another small red one was coming up to it. And I just saw it. It was so fantastic. I grabbed the camera, took a couple of shots, and fortunately came out clearly.
Oh, good.
And then the blue one sunk back into the rocks,
yeah.
And we never saw it again. Yeah. And the rest of the time, we only saw the little red ones.
Yes, they're beautiful.
The coloring
is beautiful, yeah. Red and yellow and blue. They're really beautiful crabs.
Right.
And I wonder who Sally Lightfoot was that they named these crabs.
Right.
But you know why they call them that? Because they walk very daintily.
Yes.
They walk on the tips of their legs.
Right.
You know, so it looks like, you know.
Lightfooted.
Lightfoot,
yes.
Right.
Yes.
As they move along. They move very fast, too.
They do.
Yeah, so they're beautiful to see. And I think that's why they're called Lightfoot, because they're light on their feet.
That's probably right.
Yeah.
That's probably right.
Yeah. So go ahead.
No, go ahead. That's all right. I think that's we talked about almost everything. I mean, it was really very intense. If you go, you have to expect to really put out a lot of energy,
mm-hmm.
because these trails are, they vary in length, but it's, you know, a couple of kilometers. And but it's really worth it.
It is.
I would say take a walking stick along. I came home and bought one. One point I found a stick, but mostly there are no sticks because there's so little. There's no sturdy vegetation that you can get to use because the walking is very hard.
And a good pair of boots.
Good boots or good shoes.
Good shoes, right.
Plenty of socks because you perspire from all that walking.
And make sure you go in a small boat. If you can.
I thought so.
Sure, because if you go on one of the big boats, which is like 100 passengers, sometimes you have to wait a lot. You have to do a lot of waiting. Even though they have a lot of little boats to take the people on and off, it takes a while.
Right.
With the small boats, 15, 16 people, you know, you're back on the boat in 20 minutes. You have plenty of time for lunch.
Right,
and a little rest. And,
right.
And I remember we went out two times a day. We went
out
in the morning.
Right, twice a day. Right, and in between a swim or a snorkel as well.
And I remember they were all very well run, and all the guides are Ecuadorians.
Yes.
Except the trip I went on, we went with Mickey Cohn.
Oh, right, who is not Ecuadorian.
He organized the trip.
Right.
So he was an extra guide who went along.
Okay.
So that was fun.
But about 30% of the guides are women, because we met
Oh, that's a new development.
And I asked one of the women, because I was delighted to see them in the uniform with the crest on their shirt and everything, and she said about 30% are now women. But it's really a wonderful trip to make. And
if you have time, you could spend a couple of days in Ecuador.
Right,
go to Quito.
And the itinerary, the full trip is 2 weeks. That's the other thing I should say. You can go for a week like I did, but the rest of the people on the boat, with a couple of exceptions who left when I did, three people left with me, the rest of them were on the two-week itinerary, which went to Isabela and, you know, covered more islands than we did in the 1 week. But I tell you, I don't think there's much more you could have seen. It was really quite fabulous.
1 week is just nice.
You had also said that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you did it, you took a two-week trip.
I don't remember how many days
I think
it was.
You said
it was
you went the
16 days. No, it was 16 people on the boat.
Yeah.
But we spent, because we spent a couple of days in Ecuador.
Okay.
That's why. Right. We went up to the capital city, what is it, Quito?
Quito.
We spent like a day or two in Quito, and then we went up into the mountains.
Right. And some people were doing that after the group that I was with. They had these add-ons, and they did go up in the mountains.
Yeah, so I think we were probably there 2 weeks, but certainly a week in Galapagos, unless you're really, really a naturalist and you're going to take a lot of notes and, you know, do stuff. It's certainly fine.
Right. I'll just comment two other things, and then we need to go. Quito was very pleasant. Everybody, people were very nice. I felt very well treated and comfortable. I didn't see much because you stay over on the way in and on the way out. And the hotel, the area of the airport, is all car servicing cars. So they're either selling cars or garages or tires. So it's not a very glamorous area. But people were talking on the plane who live there, and they live in gated communities. So there evidently is a whole range and beautiful homes.
And, and it's an old colonial city, like most of the cities in South America.
It's 9,000 feet high. The altitude didn't bother me, but some people had trouble with the altitude. But it was very nice. And the boat I was on was the Cachalote. And I was very impressed with the way the trip was run. The food was wonderful. The chef's name was Pedro, and he was great. And it was just everything was run really well. And I would recommend it. It was just it was really quite terrific.
It's such a unique place that you should go.
I would anybody who's interested in animals or the natural world, it should be your ambition to go to the Galapagos Islands. Anyway, so that's about it, unless there's something you want to add.
No, the only thing I was going to add was, now I don't remember, but, when we went to, to Ecuador, we were in Quito, and then we drove up into the mountains, and we were supposed to stay at a lodge up in the mountains, but that I won't talk about because that was not done too well. Something happened, but whatever. But we went to a spa. And we must have been about 12,000 feet up.
Wow.
And we go to this spa. You know, in 12,000 feet, it was freezing cold out, okay? And this was had a series of hot springs, different pools that you could go sit in, you know, from extremely hot you know, to roasting to mild. And here we were sitting in these hot springs looking at the mountains with the snow on it. It was really beautiful. And the strange thing was, we stayed there for the day. Okay, it was a day trip. And so we had lunch at the lodge also. And they started playing Christmas music. And I couldn't understand why they were playing Christmas. It wasn't Christmas. You know, playing all the famous Christmas songs. So I asked the guy. He said, well, we wanted to play American music for you. So they were playing Christmas music.
That's funny.
I thought it was pretty funny. But if you can go, do it, and I think you'll enjoy it and love it. And it's great for kids, too, because there's plenty.
Well, we didn't have any kids. I think the way we did it, I don't think you'd want to have kids.
Well, you know, kids 12, 13 years old.
They'd have to really be motivated.
Little kids, you know, you don't know. If they're good walkers, it's okay.
They have to really be interested, because it was very strenuous, and you would find yourself having walked and being exhausted, and you had no way out. There was no option except to continue. So you couldn't have a kid who was going to be whiny or tired or impatient, and you wouldn't want to have to carry a kid on those lava rocks.
Just leave him there. It gets part
Leave him on the boat. If you have a boat with a babysitter, that's the way to bring your child.
All right.
Thank you very much.
We're getting ready to sign off.
Right.
And Carol, I recommend the next trip up is Antarctica.
I'll think about it.
Okay, because if you love penguins, that's the place to see them. You can sit down on the ice and they come around you and they look at you and they start to, they try to eat your buttons.
Okay.
It's a lot of fun and you'll love it.
This is Carol Butler.
And Bernie Wides.
And we're signing off for The Naturalist, and we will be back soon.
Right.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.